When you think of the origins of punk and punk music scenes of the 1970s, generally the two big ones that come to mind are London and New York. The UK giving us origin acts such as the Sex Pistols, The Clash, The Damned, Generation X, and many more. Across the Atlantic, the scene at CBGB brought us the more artistic-leaning styles of the Ramones, the Talking Heads, Television, and Patti Smith. But there was another scene in North America that exploded and subsequently imploded in a few short years back in the 1970s. Often overlooked, but rich with history and music, I am, of course, talking about the Toronto punk rock scene.
Alternative facts, real history. This is DJ PK.
Now, I will admit to being a bit of a homer. I probably will devote a large amount of time on alternative facts to Canadian music history, and why not? The contributions to the alternative music scene are plenty, and they often get overlooked. The punk scene of the 1970s was always about the expression of a certain feeling.
Go on, you've got another 5 seconds. Say something outrageous.
You dirty bastard.
In the UK, there was a strong underlying feeling of hopelessness as the country was suffering from an economic recession, and many of the youth of the time felt like they had no future to look forward to. Across the Atlantic in Toronto, quiet Toronto, that was not really the case.
Toronto, North America's fastest growing metropolis, is a young city. A rich city, on the rise, going places. There's a new feeling in the air.
In fact, the city was in a period of slow growth. Very conservative growth, mind you, but growth nonetheless. Toronto was almost a little too quiet. This was a city where it was nearly impossible to get any alcohol at all on Sunday without ordering mounds and mounds of food. A very, very conservative area. The radio in the city leaned either towards traditional rock or pop. It was devoid of an alternative sound of any kind. A city that lacked any kind of counterculture. So how did punk rock come out of all of this?
Certainly the economic climate was 100% different here. I mean, there was never probably a more prosperous time economically in Canada than in the mid-70s and so forth, which was just the opposite of what was happening in England. So I would say, you know, like a lot of the sociological thing, man, you know, you couldn't sing about the same social ills that were plaguing England in this country at that time.
What defined the scene, therefore, if it's not really the politics of the British bands?
It was style.
Well, in comes local promoter and business owner named Gary Topp. Topp was best known for running something called the 99 Cent Roxy. Now, the Roxy was a theater that sat at 1129 Danforth Avenue in Toronto, and Topp owned the space from 1972 through 1976. And in this space, he introduced the concept of midnight movies to the city of Toronto. Prior to 1972, Topp had convinced another theater called Cine City to show music films after midnight. And through doing this, they had actually seen that there was a scene willing to support the playing of late-night underground films in Toronto. So when Topp acquired the Roxy Theater space, he immediately began showing films such as Jimi Hendrix Live in Berkeley. Now, Live in Berkeley, only 55 minutes in length, wasn't a full length, so Topp decided to charge only 99 cents per entry. Both the price and the name stuck, as the venue, of course, then became known, very infamously, as the 99 Cent Roxy. Now, this venue is known for being a smoke-filled theater with a particular atmosphere. And let me tell you, that smoke was not from tobacco, either. They would play weird films like Reefer Madness and even, most famously, John Waters' film Pink Flamingos.
Do you believe in God?
I am!
God.
You are God.
You are God.
Is there no wrong?
There is right and there is wrong. I have never been wrong, Mr. Goldstein.
Now, the Ontario Censor Board would often have a field day hacking these films up, not letting them be shown in their full original format. You know, going back to that idea of the super conservative mentality that still dominated the time in Canada. What formed around the Roxy was a midnight counterculture scene. Gary Topp definitely knew he was onto something. So a little bit later on, he purchased another venue with business partner Gary Cormier. Together, they were known as the Two Garys. This other venue that they did purchase was up on the Yonge Street Strip, and they called it the New Yorker. Now, this was a much nicer neighborhood, and the price was a little bit steeper, $2.75 per entry. But the concept of midnight movies did begin to run at the New Yorker as well.
A realistic model shows this 1,800-foot tower is enough to make King Kong dizzy.
It was in the year 1976 that Toronto started to grow up, in a sense. The massive CN Tower was completed down on the waterfront. The Toronto Blue Jays began their first season as part of Major League Baseball, and what would eventually become known as the Toronto International Film Festival launched. And Gary Topp's little theater, called The New Yorker, would be seen as the place that eventually launched what would become known as the Toronto punk rock scene.
The latest fad in popular music is punk rock. It has come out of England as a young people's expression of frustration with unemployment and lack of opportunity. Now in North America, it's a gimmick with a vengeance.
September 24th, 1976, the Ramones came to play a live gig at The New Yorker. This small 500-seat theater would then become the launching point for the Toronto scene and the many bands, personalities, songs, and venues that would follow over the next 3 years.
Punks are bored. They're hostile and they're defiant. They believe in anarchy and violence, and their aim is to shock by being repulsive. And often they succeed.
Who were those bands? Join me for part two as I break down the big names from the Toronto punk rock scene. I'm DJ BK.
This has been Alternative Facts with DJ BK.